It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282, and let's talk legal.
And we'd like to hear from you if you'd like to call in with your questions. So meanwhile, we do have Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins in the studio. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, morning. Ben.
Okay, what are we talking about today?
Last week, Ben, we talked a little bit about litigation in estates.
Oh, yeah.
That was kind of on the coattails of our conversation regarding estate administration. So we're just going to wrap up. I think this is maybe the third or fourth program on estate administration. Just kind of go over a general overview today of how it works. Maybe one thing we didn't talk about is timing.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't talk about why does it take 6 months? Why does it take a year sometimes? You know, why does it, what about this 90-day inventory you have to do? What is, you know, I hear you guys on the radio, Harvell and Collins, talking about there's a higher level of scrutiny now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's that really about? What is the, what's the clerk of court who has jurisdiction over estate administration really requiring you guys as attorneys or folks who are trying to handle estates themselves? What are they really requiring you to do now that you didn't have to do 3, 4, 5 years ago?
Okay.
So we're just going to kind of wrap up this conversation regarding estate administration with big picture estate administration would be what this, I think 30-minute
right.
segment is going to be entitled. So Mr. Estate Administration, I'll introduce him to you, Cecil Harvell.
Good morning. You know, Ben, we mentioned that it all begins at the clerk of Superior Court in the county where the decedent was living, where he had his domicile or his intention to reside and his intention to have residency. And then it begins with that oath of office, that accountability that's established between the court system and the executor. The executor or the administrator take an oath that they will faithfully and dutifully administer the estate. They will marshal together the assets. They will pay the bills according to North Carolina state law. And they then will distribute per the law or per the will. So there is accountability between the court and that fiduciary, fiduciary being executor, administrator. Once this accountability is established, then off we go. The administrator slash executor is able to go to the bank, is able to go to the stock companies, gather the CDs, transfer the titles to vehicles, to boats, to trailers, deal with the land that is in the estate, many times have the authority to sell the house or home place of the estate if necessary, things of that nature. And then, as one would expect, the clerk of court of Superior Court is going to monitor this process, require the executor to file some accountings and to show the assets of the estate and to show how the bills have been paid. And they, at that point, are going to look at the three-month statute. Let's talk about that a minute. The advertisement in the newspaper in the county where the estate is open sets forth a three-month statute, if you will, limitation on creditors being able to make their claim. And this is very important that this be done by the fiduciary, that they run this notice, because it does just that. It helps to bar creditors who do not file their claim within the three-month period. We have a file in our office that I looked at just yesterday where the creditor is calling our office and has filed their claim last Thursday, Friday. And, of course, now their lawyers are calling on Monday.
Right.
But lo and behold, guess what? They did not file it within the three-month period. That is going to really put that creditor at a distinct disadvantage.
Maybe not out completely, but
we have a leg to stand on there for sure. So Wes was mentioning the timeline. I mean, you know, I tell clients that, look, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, we are at least 4, 5, 6 months before we'll close, because the 3 months we're treading the water. right.
you say.
Right. That doesn't mean this is confusing for clients. This does not mean that during that 3 months we're not doing activity. We are.
Mm-hmm.
Within days of a death, we mm-hmm. are many times doing activity. Letters testamentary, that oath again, is established within days of death. And within a few more days after that, we're closing bank accounts. We're dealing with vehicles. All of that is happening during the 3 month period. But it's just that the estate cannot close until after that 3 month period.
And you were talking about, I know, Wes, about higher level of scrutiny. And it does seem, though, that in years past, once you took the oath, then that oath is what you stood on. And so there was a trust factor that you were going to do these things according to the oath. But now there's a little bit more scrutiny involved.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, I would say that, you know, some of us, you know, the smaller Eastern North Carolina counties, mm-hmm. there was a little bit of a handshake deal going on with the clerk of court's office. And that made things a lot easier. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that it was bad. There were a lot of good things with regard to that, but there was, less accountability. Well, I shouldn't say accountability. There was the same amount of accountability, but there was
right.
more trust based on what right. you put down on a piece of paper and sign,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to proof of whatever you put down on that piece of paper, being like the inventories or the accountings, and the proof coming in the form of account statements, you know, third party documentation from the bank or the stock company or whomever it may be. You know, we're now at a point where, you know, you really have to have all of that third party documentation in order for the clerk to close out the estate. And we've talked about it several times on the program before, how there's a little bit of a headache there. There's mm-hmm. some growing pains. Us attorneys maybe got a little bit used to things being a little easier, and not
right.
just the attorneys, folks who are trying to handle estates on their own, although they don't do it every day, it was an easier thing to do
mm-hmm.
For them. Now it's just a much higher level of accounting, I mm-hmm. should say, of documentation that proves what the assets were, what they were at the date of death, everything with regard to distribution, where assets have been distributed. Proof like copies of the checks, so on and so forth.
A signature card has to be produced.
Signature right. cards to show that the account was in fact an individual account or a joint with right of survivorship account.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of these type things. So
I'll give you a good example that we have happening also yesterday. Yesterday was a Monday, let me tell you.
Mm-hmm.
we have an estate where there are four children. The will leaves all of the tangible personal property, Ben, which are things in the house, tangible
right.
personal property, teacups,
mm-hmm.
appliances, televisions, furniture, to the four children equally.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the four children asserts, was presented a statement, if you will, to sign, saying that they had that they received their, quote, fair share of teacups. 25%
uh-huh, right.
of the stuff in the house. Now, let's keep in mind, Ben, I'm not talking about bank accounts, land,
right.
house. I'm talking about the stuff in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this child will not sign it, okay? He asserts that he has not received his fair share of stuff out of the house, and so he has refused to sign it. Well, as a result of this, we now are unable to close that estate, Ben,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to need to have a hearing on that.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a full day of activity on that file over stuff in the house. Now, that is the 2019 facts and circumstances that our executors live in. Let
mm-hmm.
me compare that with a few years ago. Maybe about 5 to 10 years ago, Ben, that file would have been handled as follows. The clerk of court would have spoken to the executor. The executor would have affirmed that, listen, I've done my best to divide everything 25%.
Mm-hmm.
After all, we're talking about stuff in the house.
Right.
Maybe
right.
there would be an affidavit or a statement from one of the other four.
Mm-hmm.
Saying that I think my sister did divide everything as best she could for
mm-hmm.
three, four ways, of things in the house. And based on the totality of the factual circumstances and circumstances, the clerk would have simply closed the file without a hearing, without a lot of hullabaloo over this, taking the position, Ben, that, look, this heir can always go hire a lawyer and challenge the executor if they so choose, okay,
right,
based on this allegation that they did not receive 25% of the teacups, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, they have the right to do that, and closing the estate or proceeding on without this affidavit is what the clerk in their discretion thought was in the best interest and of the administration of that estate, you see. And that has changed now, so that these affidavits are required, affidavit meaning a statement from each of the four saying that they got their fair share. You know, Ben, life and family dynamic and psychology, function and dysfunction in families all comes into play in a huge way in the estate settlement process. And I mean, you know, you get four siblings together, they might not agree. One of them might not agree on anything.
No.
They're not even speaking to each other sometimes.
Right.
Most unfortunately, we see a lot of files, and I would say that the majority of the files are, you know, copacetic, loving family. That's what we all want to have. But there is a percentage that no matter what you do, no matter what you say, there's conflict in that family. And signing a form saying I got 25% of the teacups in the house, it wouldn't matter what that form says. That gentleman, that sibling, that brother just simply was not going to cooperate.
All right, we're going to take a break and come back with more. If you have questions, give us a call, 247-7282, 247-7282, to talk to Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell and Collins. Of course, you can go to harvellandcollins.com, listen to past shows. They're all filed there under their titles and classification of the subject matter, so you can go check it out there. But we'll have more to come in a moment. And welcome back here, Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, and also Let's Talk Legal every Tuesday morning with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. We're talking about the estate administration and some of the pitfalls of not being able to get everybody to agree on how things are split up.
Right. So, you know, Cecil was contrasting the way things used to be years ago as to the higher level of scrutiny that we have to deal with here now, which again is not all a bad thing, but it's just something that we have to do in order to properly complete the administration of estates. And he was referring to the teacup case.
Yes, right.
Which is, you know, a situation where the teacups, as he described, were to be divided, you know, 25% each. And we have the one outlier beneficiary who will not sign the document to be filed with the clerk's office indicating that he or she did in fact receive his or her fair share of this personal property. So as Cecil was describing, you know, years ago, we would be able to just get an affidavit, most likely from the executor, maybe another one.
Leave it up to the family to figure it
out.
That's
right. But just give some confirmation to the clerk that in fact, you know, this was resolved and it was resolved fairly, notwithstanding the fact we've got this one outlier who won't sign. Well, today, what we have to do in that situation is we can't get the estate closed unless we have everyone signing off and being happy with what they received regarding the things in the house, the teacups, as it's been described in this situation. So what we have to do, as Cecil indicated, is we would have to have a hearing on that. Now, let me talk about what that means. Having a hearing would include preparing a motion. Now, the motion would be a formal legal document,
right,
moving the court for confirmation of distribution of personal property and to close the estate and acceptance of the final accounting. Okay, so that motion is then prepared, is filed with the clerk of court. You then have to get a court date. You have to prepare a notice of hearing which is another formal legal document that you have to serve on everyone that has any interest in this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you have to do that at least 5 days prior to the hearing under the rules of civil procedure, and put everyone on notice that this is when the hearing is going to be. You then have to prepare for the hearing. You have to get your witnesses who are going to testify about the teacups.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you talk to them, make sure you know what the testimony is going to be about it so we can do this once and do it right. Go to the hearing, have a hearing. If anyone can test any of this at any point in time, they would have the right to move to have it transferred to Superior Court if they wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
It'll take it right out of the clerk's hands and move it upstairs to our biggest trial mm-hmm. court in the state.
Right.
So we have our hearing, hopefully before the clerk. The clerk hears all the evidence. Clerk then enters his or her ruling. And then there's an order that's prepared. The order is then entered indicating whatever the ruling is. In the event that any party wishes to appeal, they would have a right to appeal that.
Right.
So this can go on and on and on.
And you know, everybody can have their own attorney.
Everybody can have their own attorney over the estate. Yeah. So there's a lot of, you know, what I would describe as inefficiency there, but you know, the clerks really don't have much of a choice
mm-hmm.
these days. They just have to do everything by the book, and there's not a whole lot of discretion as it relates to certain things such as confirmation that assets were received. See, you can't. It's kind of hard to prove that the person received the key, the teacup. It's a little easier to prove that the person received their fair share of the
money
because yeah. here's a copy of the check,
right.
and here's the proof that it was, you know, accepted and tendered and deposited, so on and so forth. So mm-hmm. yeah, it's just a different world as mm-hmm. compared to where it was.
And Ben, we've got just a few more minutes. Let's talk about, if you will, I think our listeners might be interested. I certainly hope they are, in the philosophy here of mm-hmm. in the historical precedent here. In the state of North Carolina, the clerk of Superior Court sits as a judge of original jurisdiction
mm-hmm.
in matters of estates. Well, as a judge, Ben, a judge exercises discretion. I mean, every single day, district court judges in domestic divorce cases, Superior Court judges
right.
in jury trials are sitting on the bench exercising their discretion. They rule on motions. They rule on exclusions. They rule on, you know, keeping evidence out, letting evidence in, letting witnesses testify, not letting witnesses testify, or any number of items, hundreds of items of discretion
mm-hmm.
in the matter of a trial by the judge. Well, historically, that was where the clerk of court, you
mm-hmm.
see,
sure.
sat in this position of authority with the ability to exercise discretion. And the clerk would listen, as I said earlier, to the executor's intention to distribute 25% of the teacups,
mm-hmm.
would maybe talk to one of the other siblings, and would just finally say, in my discretion, this matter is closed. I'm closing this estate. If this particular brother thinks he did not get 25%, then we're going to put the burden on him to come in here and file with a lawyer or whatever he chooses
right.
to do. But in the meantime, I say it was distributed 25%. I exercise my discretion. What has happened now is that in this new culture, if you will, that we're in, then with regard to states and families, the clerk has been, that there have been too many times where the clerk got, you know, slapped in the face, if you will,
mm-hmm.
with making a decision based on their discretion. And so we've swung the other way mm-hmm. now by the Administrative Office of Courts, the AOC
right.
it's referred to,
mm-hmm.
as requiring the clerk to go through all of these motions. AOC, who kind of guides the clerks of courts across the state, has tightened up, if you will, and has advised against too much exercise of discretion by the clerk of court.
And that follows on a series of audits that have happened all over the state.
It does. So, right. It does. Yeah. It does. I mean, the clerk of court can waive on a given file the document from the bank showing the account is joint with survivorship. Mm-hmm. The clerk of court can waive this affidavit saying that there were 25% division of the things in the home. Mm-hmm. The clerk of court can look at the accounting and use discretion on these things. But the clerks are hesitant to do that now, Ben, as a result of the tightening of the rules and procedures, you know, if you will, from AOC, which is in Raleigh.
All right. We'll have more to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Again, our number 247-7282. Hey, welcome back. We're talking about estate administration issues that come up. And one of the things, you know, we've always said is that in North Carolina, it's always been friendlier towards estate administration than in other states. And and it's really not that that they've imposed all these probate charges, which are true in other states, but it's now time.
It is time. It is different than it was several years ago, and certainly very, very different than when I first started practicing in the area of estate administration. You know, some 30 years ago. But the bottom line is that we are where we are. And there are advantages. And then like most things, there are some disadvantages, Ben. We are proceeding on with these new rules, regulations, the enforcement thereof. We're doing our best to do the things that we've talked about on this program, you know, evidence from the bank, affidavits from the heirs, different forms signing from the heirs that they've received their fair share, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, there are times when you just can't get a document.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You know, we run into this all the time where the bank has lost the document or the bank was not doing those documents when that CD was set up 25 years ago. You know, some people set up a CD 25 years ago and it just sits there for 25 years.
Yeah.
Okay. And the bank forms were not in place as they are now at this point. You know, you go to the bank to do anything right now, as we all know, and there's a plethora of forms that are signed to open up an account and all sorts of questions and numbers and social securities and addresses and on and on. This is not the way it was many years ago. All of this is good, Ben. We're not here. We're not complaining in the least about it. We simply are making our listeners aware of this heightened sense of accountability with our clerks of courts in estates. And therefore, you know, if any of our listeners have questions or concerns, they're appointed as an executor or they become an administrator of an estate, they certainly consult with a good lawyer and get some guidance on these things. This is happening more and more even in simple files. But to take a large estate and go it alone, you know, this under these circumstances is a bit complex for most people.
Yeah, and it is, because even some of the simpler estates, just haven't been involved in a couple lately, it says that there are some complications that do
and
come up.
And simple doesn't mean no assets, or big doesn't mean lots of assets. It's the mix of assets that counts.
Yes.
You see.
And the number of people involved.
Yeah, the number of people involved and the mix of the assets, bank, stock, boats, trailers, cars, property, farm property, investment. It's the mix of assets. The more types of assets you have, the more possibility there is that you're going to need some assistance.
And once again, that's why you want to go ahead and get in touch when you're planning your estate administration. Go ahead and get in touch with the folks at Harvell and Collins at harvellandcollins.com. Go online and check out the past shows or give them a call and set up that appointment at harvellandcollins.com.